kindness to you in reverse. Someone better call a hearse.
Good afternoon, everybody, from NPR Music. I'm Bob Boylan. We're here in Washington, D.C., and getting ready to talk with Britt Daniel and with Jim Eno of Spoon. I hope everybody's brought their questions. You've had a week to listen to the record. We're here to talk about Transference, a new Spoon record, and Britt and Jim Eno are just finishing up an interview with All Things Considered for a piece that's going to air there. And let's see if they're there in Austin.
Bob.
Anybody home in Austin?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi.
How are you?
Let's get voices straight first, which is, can I say hi to Britt and hear
this
your
is
voice?
Me. This is big old B. Britt.
Britt has the radio voice.
Ah.
Non-variable voice.
Last time I saw you, Britt, it was at a Shackleton show in Austin.
Yeah, I remember. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you. That was a great show. Do you get out to live music a lot?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Anything good lately?
What did we see lately that was good?
Oh, just so you know, this is we're live now. So in case you
yeah, okay,
we're
gotcha.
Just chit-chat.
I saw Dale Watson last week. That was huh. He's always amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of unbelievable. He plays every Monday night at the Continental Club. He's a legend.
And you're hanging out these days in Portland more than Austin?
I've been in Austin a lot lately for release kind of stuff and just to be near to Jim. He needs some help every now and then.
Oh, it's been good.
Feeling more comforted. So let me explain the format here for everybody so that you guys know and the chat room knows. We're here for about 45 minutes. We have we asked people this week to spend some time listening to the record. And thanks, guys, for letting us put this record online a week before its release. A record Transference comes out next Tuesday. Our audience has listened to it. I've seen lots of messages come my way, a lot of excitement. I've spent the last few weeks listening to the record, and it's a good one. More than a good one.
Thanks.
It's a really good one. And I'm really looking forward to the other thing, which is that you're playing Austin for South by Southwest, the opening of South by Southwest and NPR Music's show there at Stubbs, the great barbecue place. And that's going to be, you're headlining that
show. You going to be there, Bob?
I am going to be there.
Are you
going to
be the MC?
I may not be on stage, but I'm going to be the MC for a live webcast that we do for all the people out there.
What if we want you to introduce us?
We can work that out.
Okay. Work on your speech.
Yes.
we'll write it for you. Don't worry. We'll hand it to you right before you go on.
And you'll write it in reverse, I'm sure.
We're working on jokes.
So in the audience, we have a bunch of people who have spent time listening to the record and asking questions. Robin Hilton is here with me. Say hey, Robin.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Hi.
And Robin's here to read the questions that are coming in a chat room we have opened. And Robin will be the voice of our beloved fans, who are some of the best music fans in the world. So why don't we get started right away? We'll mix this up with some music. But since we have you for such a short time, we're going to do a little more talk than music. And people can listen to the whole album through Monday, I think the stream is up. And then they can have fun buying it. I see there's some extras and so forth that's going to be with the record. We can talk about that later. So, Robin, you want to open us up with the...
Yeah, we have so many questions coming in. It's kind of hard to keep up with them all. But here's one from Chad that says, I watched the interview with your mastering engineer, Howie Weinberg. He mentions that Transference has a dirtier sound. I'm wondering what your take is on that, whether you've worn off some of the polish and adopted a brasher attitude for this record.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think it's sort of naturally a dirtier, maybe grittier record. It's, I think my mom will still like it. It's not that hardcore, but I don't know. Yeah, we produced ourselves. A lot of the songs are either demos themselves or based on demos, and we played over the demos.
I got the impression when I listened to it that that gritty edge was going to get more gritty when this stuff hit a stage. And I was wondering, as songwriters, how you think about what you're doing in the studio versus what winds up on stage. Do those two things come into play?
Every song's different. Some songs we work up, as a band and get better and better at playing, and then we'll go record them. And those are the ones we can play right now. And then there's some songs that we kind of perfect as studio creations. And then we got to go learn how to play them live, And that's what we're going to go do this afternoon.
And for those songs, I don't think we think in the studio, we don't have the live aspect affecting the recorded part of it. Mm.
You're just working pretty focused on this, on the record, to get the sound and the record the way you love it. And you worry about the other stuff later is sort of what you're saying?
Yeah, on those songs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Good. Robin, you want to?
Well, there actually were a lot of questions about the production of the record, doing it yourself versus working with another producer. Is it something that you would do again, work with an outside producer?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Would we work with an outside producer?
Yeah. Here's one question from Andrew, who just wonders how the process was different for you and which you prefer.
I mean, because there was more control this time around.
Yeah.
We've always been pretty hands-on, so I don't feel like there was any less control before. It was just that there were two different aesthetics trying to be met. And this time it was just us, and, you know, we kind of just took this attitude that if it ended up being a little more amateurish because we were, you know, setting up the... Well, Jim is an engineer, knows how to set up mics. I don't really. But if it ended up being a little more amateurish, then that would be fine. You know, that would be part of the charm of the record.
I didn't think that was true, though. I mean, I thought that it seemed to me there was a lot of care and detail and...
So there's a lot of care and detail into it, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, when I'm recording myself in my basement in Portland, which is how a lot of the record was made, then I have, like, one or two little tricks, and that's all I know how to do.
But you get good sounds. Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't have used them if it was good sounds, you know, so.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I work on the sounds.
Yeah.
I'm always just knocking my engineering hats.
Your tricks are working, dude.
Yeah.
Is there something in that basement in Portland that we'd put on the record? Maybe it's as simple as the ballad.
That you can hear?
Yeah, that I'd hear. We'll just play a minute of it. We have had no music. And for those who haven't spent the time listening to the record, let's just give them a feel. Drawing a blank.
What, I'm sorry. I thought you said you were going to play something.
Yeah, I was, and I was just thinking, is there a specific cut on the record?
Oh, okay. For Goodnight Laura, that's definitely that piano is in this room that's tiled in the basement, and you can hear that pretty something severe.
Did you cut the vocal live too, or was it overdubbed vocal?
That was overdubbed.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's hear just a bit of it. I'm going to take your mics out for a second, folks.
Okay.
Sounds like written for a friend, yeah.
Sounds like Waiting for a Friend?
A song written for a friend. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Mumbled for
a friend. I love that song, Waiting for a Friend.
It's a nice sound. It's a nice piano sound. More affected, I would imagine, than just that tiled room, no? I mean,
no, that is just the tiled room. It's just there's a mic set up
across the room. I call that the John Lennon room.
Yeah, yeah. It does kind of have that
sound.
Feel.
Yeah. That's a great sound. Robin,
yeah, there's no effects added. It's just mic placement from across the room.
Mm, I would never thought that. That's great to know.
Was there any reverb on it?
No.
here's a question from Laura, who says that she loves the title of Goodnight Laura. She's curious about the song Is Love Forever, the percussion at the beginning. She says, at the beginning of the song is so jarring on first listen. It sounds out of sync with the vocals, but it just somehow falls into place after that. What was the thought process behind that arrangement?
Oh, does the beat sound like it's kind of off from the pattern of the vocals? Is that what she's saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of heard that sometimes too. Yeah.
Well, I think what we do this sometimes where we don't start on one, right? I think we start on that snare drum as the first beat.
Yeah, so that's confusing.
It sort of gives you this feel that it's opposite, I guess. And so that could be what she's hearing.
Sometimes when we were working on that song, I felt like it was like, I want so it's like the vocal is happening between the drum beats.
Oh right, yeah, yeah.
I woke up in a supermarket. It doesn't seem like it's really on any beat. Sort
yeah,
of.
Right.
To a little bit of it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just play just a bit for those who haven't heard. But that was a good, you know, that you did a good rendition. But yeah, there's a better one on the record. Let's hear it.
Yeah, Jim, I bet she was talking about what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The beat starting.
Yeah, it starts on the two instead of the one, and then it's, you know, it gets your brain all twisted up.
Yeah.
That's nice. I love that.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Jim. When you're playing, do you ever just want to just tear it up, just break out of form, and just start playing like Neil Peart or something like that?
I've been asking him that for the last couple of weeks. Well, I think we need to get Jim to start drinking more at shows.
Well, I can't play like that, so it's like...
You mean you can't play like with...
Well, no,
you?
I can't play like Neil Peart, and just tear it up, you know?
Oh.
I don't know.
Does Neil Peart tear it up?
Well,
he plays a lot
busier.
Of notes, I guess.
Yes, yeah. he plays a lot of notes, much busier.
Well, in Trouble, I sort of think of that as like trying to be like Keith Moon, only not really pulling it off, but, you know.
That's a good take.
Yeah, that take is good. Hmm. Yep. That take, it feels like I don't really know where I am, and it's about to fall apart at any second.
I don't even hear that. It sounds to me like you're totally just in it and feeling it.
Yeah.
You know, like you know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
No?
I don't know.
That's what it feels like to me.
I hear
feels like you're totally in touch with the performance and the song.
I was definitely going for it. I can hear hesitations like, oh great, am I supposed to, is this where we drop out or whatever, you know?
You hear that? I don't know.
Yeah, I can hear stuff like that.
Can we hear the end of Trouble Comes Running, like the last I don't know,
sure.
30 45 seconds?
Yeah
sure.
This is,
let's skip ahead.
Well, that's
here.
The beginning.
Princes walk the ground like the slaves. This sounds like it could have come off of Who Sell Out.
I'm just surprised I ended with you guys.
Yeah. Well, we missed some of your classic fills in there. I think they were a little earlier than that. But, Jim was getting off.
Yeah.
It's always impressive to me when a band has that in them, but they exercise that restraint, particularly live, because I think you get really amped up in the song, and the natural inclination is just to sort of start running with it.
Oh, I speed up live.
You know, it's funny, I hear you going back and forth talking. I would think, because of the nature of the songs, they sound very crafted. On the other hand, from what I hear you talking, it sounds like you don't talk a lot about making these songs, you just make the songs. Would I be right about that now? And wrong
about
it before?
We talk about how the songs are or how we're gonna do it, but for a song like that, you know, that song in particular was recorded in a practice space on cassette. We weren't trying to it's from a rehearsal session that we never topped it, so we ended up just using that that cassette.
That's why
so when that was being recorded, we were just learning the song.
That's great. I'm talking with Britt Daniel and Jim Eno. They're in Austin, Texas. I'm Bob Boylan with All Songs Considered. We're talking about the new record, Transference. There's a chat room link, if you haven't figured this out by now, on the page that got you to this audio, and that's where you can ask questions. That's where you can see a lot of people saying an awful lot of things that won't make it onto the show. Robin Hilton is here with me, and he's asking the questions that you type in. Robin, what do we got?
Well, here's the question from Dan that kind of ties in with what we were talking about, how crafted or prepared the songs are. He says, after a few listens, I think Before Destruction is one of the most intriguing tracks, especially in its very raw production. Were tracks like this one more spontaneous and recorded quicker this time around, or were they still labored over?
That one was. That was a demo, and I was kind of recording parts as I was writing it and writing the parts as I was recording them. We got that. You know, the demo that I made in one day was pretty good and pretty much what you're hearing on the record. Then did we added a little bit to it?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Later on. Like, I think we re-recorded the vocal in the second verse, re-recorded the guitar in the second verse, so it kind of has a moment. But most of that was just done.
Lots of questions about what kinds of other artists or artworks influence you. Here's one from one user who says, tell us about any literary influences, current books you'd recommend or have recently read, or books that have played into past recordings.
I'm reading this book on it's interviews with Stanley Kubrick. I think it's called Kubrick Interviews, and it's pretty enlightening. What else?
It's about just about filmmaking, or is it stretch out to?
Yeah, it's about it's different interviews throughout his entire career life, and there's like basically one great one per film is what it looks like.
Nice.
What else? Jim, are you a reader?
I just read drum magazines.
You got to stay up on the latest beats, right?
Yeah, I try to. Yeah.
The title of the record, do you say Transference or Transference? How do you
Transference? Is how I say
and,
it.
And I was a psych major when I started college. Didn't end that way.
But, so you should probably know better than me then.
Well, I only remember it as a term. It sort of is like if you had a teddy bear that might have scared you when you were seven, and then you fall in love with somebody maybe that looks like a teddy bear. You might have this sort of fear that you had of the teddy bear onto this person. It's this. That was probably the worst explanation way to explain this. But it's the idea of taking something from the past and putting it into the present and putting that onto somebody else. Shifting it. What attracted you to that term? Is there something specific?
Well, first off the bat, when I saw the word, I just thought that is a handsome looking word. I like the way it looks on paper. I like the way it sounds. Maybe that could be a title of something. And then once I read that chapter on Transference, then it rang real true to me. And so that was kind of always the title I was pulling for in the back of my mind. And we did discuss a lot of other ones, but do you remember what other ones we discussed? Other titles we had? Now I can't remember any of them.
Matty Pickles, wasn't there something?
Oh yeah, me and Matty Pickles.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's not quite as as regal a name as Transference.
and then the artwork on the record.
Yeah, and that seems to tie in to the title somehow to me. You know,
describe because the record's not out yet. A lot of people might not have seen it.
It's a photo by William Eggleston, and it's a photo of a kid in a chair. It's kind of hard to describe what's going on in the photo because sort of nothing's going on, but it's a richly detailed photo.
He's slouching like he could not be less interested.
That's funny because on the other hand, young teen, right? So you say kid. I
heard he was 14.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say 14, 15. And then it looks like he's in this very decadent place where he maybe shouldn't be. It's sort of dark lighting. There's cigarettes around. It's almost like something, you know, there's something that maybe's going to happen to this kid. I didn't think he looked not interested.
Some people think he looks bored, and some people think he has an arched eyebrow that says a lot that he is actually thinking something.
And you seem to like that about record covers. What's a good record cover to you guys?
Highway 61. Revisited?
Because it says everything and nothing. It's right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's just amazing-looking record cover. What else? I love that one McCartney that has the bowls of... It's like
the
cherries.
Very first Paul McCartney record, which is a Linda Eastman photograph.
Yeah.
That's
striking. So, I mean, I don't know if that means anything, but it's...
Well, Life's a Bowl of Cherries is one, but the other is the bowl of cherries is all over the darn place, right?
Got it.
Yeah, so that's whatever. What it means. I mean, and I think what you seem to like is when people can infer and put their own ideas onto an idea that you put forth is what it sounds like.
And also for it to be, you know, just first of all, it has to be a striking image.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that is open to interpretation is.
As your words are. Robin, we got more?
Hey, Shelby just wants you guys to know you're a very handsome band.
Well, thanks, Shelby.
Yes. Also, here's a comment from Tara who says that after a dozen or so listens, I understand why you'd call Transference the spooniest album yet. It's a perfect composite of all those spoon elements we've grown to love over the years and still manages to come off as fresh and innovative. This is a huge question, but what is the main driving factor in your evolution as a band? Personal experiences, aging, the influence of other bands or musicians?
I think
Say that again. What's the driving?
What is the driving factor in your evolution as a band? Personal experiences, aging. You are aging.
Ambition and fear. You know?
Sounds like friendship.
If I'm going to dedicate my life to this band, then I want it to be, you know, the best band in the world, and I want to, you know, make records that are going to be great forever, you know. Also, I don't want to do it half-assed.
Also some enjoyment and fun, you know.
A little bit.
That part
bit
happens
that, just
later.
Just a little.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. I mean, he says that as a secondary thing, but I have more fun with these guys and more camaraderie than I do doing anything else. So.
Yeah.
This is just a quick side question that from Heather, who says it's a bit off topic, but she's been seeing the promo photos of the band for this record and was wondering if they were taken at the Napoleon House in New Orleans.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, but she's got a good eye then.
This is the one sitting on the bench. Is that the one I'm talking about? No.
The one where we're holding a phone. There's a payphone in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the first picture of our fifth member in the band that we're going to be touring with.
And tell us about that fifth member.
Well, there's a waiter from the Napoleon House who's in the photo.
He was very photogenic, but that was great.
He was charming. Those are the ones that have all... We're standing in front of the... Or sitting and standing in front of the wall with all the graffiti.
Uh-huh. I don't... You know, here's a question about a recent New York Times piece that I didn't read, so I'm not familiar with it, but Nicole and Dallas writes, how does Britt feel about the New York Times portrayal of his quote-unquote cool in its recent profile of Spoon?
It's true.
You are cool? I don't know what the reference is, actually, since I haven't read it.
I don't have any objection with being called cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
If there was something specific that their portrayal of it, I don't know. I don't come across as a can I say a dick? I don't come across as a dick in the New York Times.
No, not at all. Uh-uh.
Yeah, so you don't usually see that as a parenthetical description in any New York Times article. Britt Daniels, who, by the way, yeah.
The nice thing about your band, I think, you know, if you're a musician and you think about the bands you'd like to be in, for me as a musician, the kind of band to be in is the kind of band that just does what they do, and they make it because of what they do, and that's it. Do you know what I mean? Never felt like you were trying to be someone that you weren't, and I like that about your band a lot.
Well, thank you.
And what is it, 17, 18? How many years now?
You're
teenagers.
16 years.
Mm-hmm.
16 years, yeah.
As a band, so. Wow.
Man, that's scary.
Great. And you guys still like each other, I can hear. At least you're doing good.
We're in separate rooms right now.
Here's a question from a user named May. What do you do to get out of a creative block when you're writing songs?
Well, sometimes I try to push through it, but that can be damaging to your psyche, you know? Mm-hmm. Just keep trying to work on it. I don't know, sometimes the best thing to do is take a nap, get away from it for a little while. I like going and learning someone else's song, or maybe a dozen songs, you know, just kind of let your mind work in a different way for a while, you know.
A comment from Chris. He says, in the last year or two, indie music has really become heavy on the pop. Many bands have been focusing on dance beats, etc. After making a record like Ga 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 Ga, which was heavier on the pop sound for Spoon, is Transference in any way a reaction to the current state of indie or alternative music?
I don't think it's a reaction that's affected in any way by what anybody else is doing. I think, if anything, unconsciously, or maybe just slightly consciously, we kind of react against the record we made before.
So how would that show itself in a record like this?
Well, I mean, that last one was very hi-fi. It was very meticulously handled in the performances, in the recording, and this is a little bit more off the cuff and a little bit more human, in my opinion.
Can we just play a little bit, maybe? Would I Saw the Light be maybe a good example of that? Or do you have a better example? Something that wouldn't be on Ga 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 Ga.
Something that wouldn't be on Ga 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 Ga.
So to speak.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, all right. Bob Boylan from Washington, D.C. has a question. He wants to know favorite effects pedals. Thanks, Bob.
Huh?
Do you I don't know. Do you have some
Was
favorite
effects?
He had my name. Favorite effects pedals? You got a favorite? That I love the sound of the guitar on that. It's fairly basic.
That was recorded. Thanks.
Yeah, I liked it.
That was recorded on just the guitar into a little $100 Vox Pathfinder amp with the distortion turned up.
Great.
And it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, we use a lot of Electro Harmonix pedals. They're pretty good.
I love their stuff.
Yeah. So you're a guitar player yourself.
Guitar player, electronics.
You a tweaker?
Stuff. Yeah, I'm not a tweaker. I'm a user.
Well, you know,
and
well,
an abuser.
I mean, you seem to know a bit about pedals.
Oh, in that way, yeah. I don't go in and tweak my pedals, but I do go in and like to muck with them and put things where they probably shouldn't be.
What's your rig, man?
We'll talk offline.
Right. Let's see.
Like
you know, a lot of people have been asking about the Metacritic poll that called you guys the best band of the aughts.
Yeah.
They'd like you to comment on that.
It's true.
Who would your choice be?
I don't know. That last LCD Sound System record was pretty good. That holds a lot of weight. It was just one record. But,
yeah. I would say Radiohead.
Radiohead's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, along those lines, here's a listener named Chad who writes, "What should I listen to right now?"
What should you listen to right now?
Yes.
You should listen to Prince Buster's album Reka Pum Pum.
I have no idea
that
what
one?
That is.
No.
I do not know what that one
Prince
is.
Prince Buster? Man, is he good.
Just
it's
something
rock
about
steady.
Who is he? Where's he from?
He's a Jamaican guy. That record was made in the mid '60s, and you know, it's rock steady, kind of pre-ska, pre-reggae kind of stuff. That's a good one. What else? What else do I like, Jim? Jim, what do you like? No, Jim, what do I like?
Oh boy.
You got to come in with that stuff written down.
Yeah, I know.
AC/DC, AC/DC, Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
There you go.
Bob Dylan, and then Warsaw. Get all four of one of those records.
Great. Transference is a good one, too. But he won't say that.
Thank you.
Renee writes in saying that she or she has read some negative reviews of Transference saying there aren't any hooks in it.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
Well, that's might be true.
That's just their opinion, man.
Hey, that's just your opinion, man.
You it don't is have a different kind of. For you go through. All right, we got two hooks in that one. That's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's go.
It's just a different kind of record, and it may not be as poppy. You know, like a song like "The Underdog" has a zillion chords in it, and it's very pop structured and very traditional. And we like those kind of songs, but we didn't really end up with any songs like that this time. This time, sometimes there'd be a song with just one or two chords in it. And there was a lot of kind of just doing one thing and sticking to it, you know, on this record. And that's that's a different type of good. You know, it's more of an intense kind of good.
I also think there's a lot of hooks on this record, but maybe they're more subtle and they're not like...
Yeah, how long have this person been listening to the record?
Yeah. like, I mean, even just like...
well, they said, you know, somebody else said it. I don't even know.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, they need,
even if it's just like guitar things or small vocal things, I think those things can also be very hooky on songs.
Yeah,
those are the things I like.
A phrase. A song
yeah,
phrase.
Yeah, exactly. It
could be a hook.
So it's not a...
But it might be more of a grower, and that's fine. You know, and some people who loved our last record may not like it, but I, you know... At this point, we've made 7 albums, and we can't keep trying to just make better and better ones. We have to kind of make different ones.
I find this record, well, first of all, it's a great record to drive. I drove back and forth to New York this weekend with it. Great driving record, and there's a lot to be said about great driving records. And I think it's also trance-inducing, which is a little scary for driving, but they do go hand in hand.
Trance-inducing, yeah.
It is. It's got that pulse. That pulse, it's just...
And it makes me want to text.
What? The record makes you want to text?
When I'm driving, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's a great part in Who Makes Your Money that I love, that little breakdown of the guitar with, I guess it's got some delay on it or something. And
yeah.
A couple guitars late. Yeah, let's listen. I really love that part.
Thanks.
I'll scroll in here a little bit here to that.
It's almost modal in many ways, because not many chords happen and so forth. It stays in one place.
Oh.
That's a nice song, too.
That's a good one, too. Yeah.
Scoot in, or
yeah. Scoot
in, Robin. I'm gonna leave your mics open, guys, in case you want to say anything.
Oh,
okay.
I could listen to an hour of that.
Yeah, I'd like to make a record of just that.
It's total beauty and simplicity. I think some people, I think, well, I shouldn't say some people, but one thing that happens as we all listen to so much more stuff than we ever could before is that it's easy to glance at something and say, oh, there's not much going on there, and move on to the next thing. And so... when there is something basic and simple going on as that, it's easy to say there's nothing going on, but there's an awful lot to fall in love with right there in that little bit of minimalism, really.
Well, thanks, man.
Mike writes in, and he wants to know if you guys still believe in rock and roll.
Yes. What do you think? Yeah, we do. I certainly do.
Yes.
Here's a listener named Melinda who wants to know if you have anything special planned for your Conan O'Brien appearance next week, which is possibly his last week.
I think Jim said he was going to go dressed up as Jay Leno. he's getting the chin. Actually, you kind of already got a chin, don't you?
Do I?
You got the George Clooney chin.
Yeah.
I think we're going to play Written in Reverse. And in answer to the previous question, my ex-girlfriend was always asking me why everything had to be rock and roll. So it is something that why does that have to be so rock and roll? Why does it always have to be all about rock and roll?
Do you notice your song writing changes as you've gotten older? Do you look at stuff when you were younger and say, oh, that was so...
Yes.
Yeah. So what is it that you like about what you're doing now that you didn't do before? And that's true of you. I'm asking that of you, Jim, and you're playing as well. What's good about aging is the question here.
I think. Tell me. Yeah, wisdom, yeah. You know. I don't know. I think we're just more... I think I'm, you know, a lot more kind of loose and open now than I was when we first started as a band. More, you know, open to creative whims, and a little more mysterious in our record making.
And I think like being able to see a big picture to getting older, like making the record varied, I guess, you know, and sort of looking at it that way as opposed to I don't know.
And how is your drumming different?
Yeah,
though?
Yeah. I'm thinking that.
Well, I guess that ties into it. My drumming is I'm much more content playing something simple, mm-hmm. because I think it sometimes fits and is a lot ballsier to do than to just, you know, do fills at the end of every verse leading into a chorus. And a lot of songs on this record, they don't even have cymbals, which I think is cool. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of a restraint thing, I guess, and... trying to challenge myself. Brit always challenges me, so I think it's good.
Can you give us a small idea what you're going to do in Austin, Texas at South by Southwest? Will be, well, I don't know, is it the very first time in the U.S. You will have played much of this material? What can we look forward to in Austin and get us psyched?
Get you psyched.
We're doing a live webcast.
A dunking booth for the MC.
Dunking booth for the MCs.
Dunk the MC.
That was going to be me, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Now I get it.
So, Bob's a little slow on the uptake there. Yeah.
Well, months away.
Yeah. No, I know. And I actually was hoping, and I'll put you on the spot. You just say no. It's okay. Bob will be
You're
okay
hoping?
With this. That you would actually just do the album and do
just
other
do
stuff.
The album.
You do other stuff, but do, from top to bottom, do this album.
Let's go. How long do we have? How long do we get?
Well, I think it stops. You get an hour and 15, maybe an hour and 10, 15 minutes. So you could do the album and then have lots of, you know, favorite songs. You guys chew that
sounds
over.
Like a good idea to me.
All right.
We'll have to figure out how to play all the songs by then.
I'd be more likely to MC if you did that. I'm just saying.
Bob. We got to make Bob. Got to keep the MC happy. You know.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this today, by the way. I appreciate it, and thanks for Austin. Great music for the last 7 albums, and for me, maybe 10 years as a fan. There are probably people out there a lot longer, but. It's great, and I look forward to seeing and hearing you play in Austin. Thanks for all the people in the chat room.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. So.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Be well. KUT, thank you there, and we'll see you all. March 17th is the date of the show that I keep talking about, which happens to be St. Patrick's Day. If you guys just, you know, if you're thinking costumes and stuff, I'm just saying.
That's
be well.
True.
And we'll put this live. We'll put this conversation, if you jumped in on the middle of it, we'll put it up online, and the chat that there were, you know, a lot, Robert, hundreds.
Yeah, way more questions
than we got to.
Could ever get to.
But thanks for everybody. That'll stay online as well. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. Let's go out on a Spoon song and enjoy. You're going to Europe soon? Is that what happens to you guys soon? You're going to rehearse and go off and play
we'll be
stuff in Europe.
Traveling around next week for the week of release, and then the next thing after that is going to Europe. Yeah.
Transference comes out the 19th of June. It comes out on Tuesday, and that's your chance. You have a chance to listen to the whole thing now before you go out and wind up buying it, because it's a contagious little record. So be well, everybody.
Thank you.
For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
I was in a functional way. I had my brown sound jacket, Queen of Cork collect on my arm. She was my calmer down. She was my good luck charm. She was my good luck. Here it come running, here it come running again. Ah, trouble come running, here it come running again. Well, alright, I gotta take it away by a heavenly host to a heavenly place. I didn't want to leave, I would not be swayed. Ah, but here it come running, here it come running again. Ah, trouble where it cuts up, here it come running. Well, are you picking up, are you picking up what I'm putting down? Putting down,
here it come running, here it come running.
Ah, running again.